Okay, so we'll move from IS 21 all the way to IS 23. Nicolette, you're going to tear it up?
Thanks. Thank you, Sue. Thank you and good morning, committee members. We received two questions on IS 23, which are addressed in papers 3A and 3B. We will first discuss agenda paper 3A, which addresses how an entity determines the amount of borrowing costs eligible for capitalization in a particular fact pattern. Paragraph 5 outlines the fact pattern, and paragraph 8 illustrates the fact pattern using the example. We conducted outreach on this matter. Paragraphs 14 to 16 summarize our findings on this outreach. Paragraphs 17 to 18 present our analysis of how an entity determines the borrowing costs eligible for capitalization in the particular fact pattern, and our conclusion is summarized in paragraph 29 of the paper. We have received some comments asking for clarity as to what we mean in bullet A of paragraph 29 of the paper. So, to explain, our thinking in bullet A is based on the opening words of paragraph 14 of IAS 23, reproduced in paragraph 20 of the paper. This paragraph says, to the extent that an entity borrows funds generally and uses them for the purposes of obtaining a qualifying asset. We note that paragraph 18 of IAS 23 implies that the average carrying amount of that asset during the period is normally, but not always, a reasonable approximation of expenditures. In the fact pattern submitted, the approach in paragraph 18 would mean that the entity includes all expenditures on the qualifying asset, including those incurred before obtaining the general borrowings. So, although in most cases an entity would include all expenditures on a qualifying asset, we think that the entity would still apply judgment in determining whether any of the expenditures is not funded through general borrowing. If considered helpful, we would amend the tentative agenda decision to include some of this explanation, which is set out in paragraphs 20 to 22 of the paper. I would like to draw your attention to question 1 on page 9 and ask you if you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IAS 23.
We've been worn out by IAS 21.
I just want to say I agree with the step analysis and conclusion. Just one of my suggestion is that, you know, maybe if we include the example in the appendix C, maybe it's going to be very helpful to understand the agenda decision. So that's my only suggestion.
Okay, thank you. John.
I agree with the staff analysis. I mean, I agree you don't start capitalizing borrowing costs until you actually have borrowings and have borrowing costs. But I think there's an undue emphasis in the analysis on the fact that the general borrowings need to be used for the purpose of the qualifying expenditure. I think in practice, generally, it's been interpreted that if you have general borrowings and you have qualifying expenditure, I mean, when you have specific borrowings, there's obviously a link between the borrowing and the expenditure. For general borrowings, you don't need that link, and therefore, if you have general borrowings and you've got qualifying expenditure, you would capitalize. You don't have to. There's not a secondary step to try to determine that they've been used for that purpose. And I think the paper, it's referencing the literature, and it's not something, I mean, maybe there is a higher hurdle of link between general borrowings and qualifying expenditure, but that, in practice, that's not how that paragraph has been interpreted.
And there was another paragraph, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think hopefully in what Nicolette explained, John, just to say that hopefully what we've now realised is that what may be helpful there is there are actually, and I think where you're saying practice has been, it is probably feeding off words that are in paragraph 18 of IS 23, and just to point you to where that is in the paper, is it's in paragraph 21 of the paper. So there is actually words in paragraph 18 of IAS 23 that already say that, you know, typically you use the average carrying amount, which I think feeds off what you're saying, how practice works. So that's saying it uses the word normally. So I think that to the extent we think that's helpful, we'd be happy to build some of that into the tentative agenda decision, because I think that probably more completely, by the way, reflects what IAS 23 says.
Yeah, I mean, I think the agenda decision, the way it's worded, would seem to imply that you need to have demonstrated the general borrowings are used for the purpose of the qualifying expenditure, and I don't think it's necessary that they be used for specific. You know, they're not specific borrowings; they're general borrowings, so it's a different requirement.
Bruce,
thanks. I agreed with the staff paper and the conclusions that were drawn. I'll just tell you from my point of view. I just found that the example in Appendix C, it was kind of like once I went through that, it just made it very clear to me. So I, not that I would not issue the agenda decision as it is, I just personally found that I think the inclusion of that that example made it pretty clear as to what you'd do.
All right. And Martin?
I also agree with the staff paper. I mean, the same way as you have a cash pooling, you also have a kind of borrowing pooling. Mm. So only in the case you have no borrowings at all, you are not able to capitalize borrowings prospectively, but in general you have bridge loans or whatever. There might be one exception, and this exception if you are if you have foreign exchange restrictions, so to say.
I was allowed to mention that word.
That means for countries where you really have the challenge to fund a company from abroad, and that where you really raise external funds specifically for that within that country, then probably, although on the group level you have sufficient borrowings, you have to consider whether it is appropriate to capitalize for that qualifying asset in that specific country. What's not discussed here is what's happening with turnarounds on big assets, so to say, whether you are allowed to capitalize borrowings for turnarounds. That's probably another issue for another
question for another day.
Yeah, for the future.
Thanks. Tony.
I think my comments are very similar to John's, and I think in responding to what Nicolette said, I think it would be helpful to refer in the agenda decision to paragraph 18. Is the intention to actually answer the question? Because I think when you introduced it, you answered the question. The agenda decision at the moment does not actually answer the specific question. Because if you do refer to paragraph 18, then it would lead you on to the actual answer to the question.
I suppose my thought, and Javed or Nicolette coming in, is that we think it would be very helpful to include the words in paragraph 18 for the reasons you've given. And rightly, first of all, it's on point, and we should. And I think we recognise that it was in the analysis but missing.
Yeah.
But also the words in paragraph 18 talk about normally. And obviously I think normally doesn't necessarily mean always. So I think what we were planning to do is still... So if you look at the agenda decision, maybe still keep some of what, or maybe all of what is at the bottom of page. Sorry. I'm now talking about the agenda decision, which I know I'm jumping the gun, but I think the idea would be to almost keep all of what is, you know, page one into the top of page two of the agenda decision, but then rather than sort of repeat the A and B, more just say that means in this situation you would think about the extent, but in doing so, it's important to look at paragraph 18, which says an entity normally uses an average exchange, you know, an average carrying amount. And the fact pattern in the request, that would mean applying both before and after. So it wouldn't answer the question in all situations. We think that to tie to the words, you know, it would still say you consider the extent, but remember the paragraph 18 says normally, but not always, you use
and
an average.
And the implication of that is, which is, I think what you just said, I think that would be fine.
Yeah.
I think Katrina just answered my question. I had concerns about that paragraph in the agenda decision, in the paragraph 29, which is then repeated in the agenda decision, that penultimate paragraph that the committee concluded with the A and B, but the way you just laid it out, I think addresses my concern.
Bertrand.
A similar comment as what John said previously. And if you don't have a specific borrowing for a qualifying asset, then you would apply a capitalization rate to using the rate of general borrowings, obviously. And it was my comment will refer to paragraph 20. I would read that as effectively you apply that, except in the circumstances where you would demonstrate that a part of the general borrowing is there to specifically finance the qualifying assets. Then I would understand why you come out with the computation of the capitalization as expressed in Appendix C, so on page 17. Otherwise, if it's not the case, then I can't see why you can depart from view one. I think there is a nuance there. I understand why you're saying that in some cases or in some instances, you might, even though you begin to capitalize as from the existence of the general borrowing, you compute the capitalization before. I understand that. It's because for the reasons expressed in the paper. But I would then be more precise because there might be circumstances where it's not the case. And then in practice, effectively, what I've understood from the outreach in my country is that effectively, generally, it's mostly view one that is applied. So I would understand, so I would be more specific and restrict maybe the agenda decision to... So there is a capitalization rate applied to general borrowings, yes, as from the date this general borrowing is put in place, except if it can be demonstrated that a part of the general borrowing is there to finance qualifying assets, and obviously there was just a technical delay to issue the general borrowing to finance the qualifying assets. But I would restrict a bit the agenda decision, because as written it's a bit general, I think. And I would lean more towards view one, except if you have effectively arguments to demonstrate, then you can apply a computation as put on page 17 of the paper.
I think, Bertrand, just to be clear, at least the direction we're going and what we just sort of expressed and others commented on, it's almost the other way. So certainly the agenda decision to me would not be banning what is quoted as view one and the submission, because there's still that possibility, but it would almost, based on the words in paragraph 18 of IS-23, lean you the other way, because it would almost say, normally we'd expect you that when you come along and apply your capitalisation, you know, from the date you take out the borrowings, normally... you know, we'd expect you to look at all of the expenditure, you know, at that point in time. The wording of the normally and what we'd say in the agenda decision, however, normally doesn't mean always. And clearly there would still be, and it would be correct in our view in applying IS-23, that to the extent that you think you've funded, you know, some or all of the expenditure and the qualifying asset from, say, equity or cash resources and not from general borrowings, then that still would be, you know, an answer that you would get to based on...
Honestly, notably for maybe it will be similar comment as Robert just expressed. I mean, based on the actual wording of the agenda decision, I cannot go to the answer. I mean, it's impossible. Notably, the A, rather than whether it incurs particular expenditures before or after obtaining the general borrowings, honestly, I don't know what it means.
Yeah, and so that's
I don't
part
understand
of what
we
change.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then it's why what I'm saying, I perfectly appreciate what that's, yeah. I presented on purpose what I've just expressed the other way around. It was on purpose, obviously. But I mean, then... whatever you have to restrict, just to mention the fact that it's not in all circumstances.
Absolutely.
And there are circumstances whereby, effectively, it's not the case, and you do not compute a capitalization for expenditures incurred before the general borrowing was put in place.
Michael.
Just a very quick point. I might be misremembering, so this is not from my current role that I've got this recollection, so it's not as the past observer. But just to John's point and picking up something Katrina just said, my recollection was that practice was that you generally top-slice general borrowings. So you might be a bit nervous about what you just said, Katrina, where you said, well, unless you're financing it with equity or cash. I think we used to say in my old employer that if you've got general borrowings and you've got an asset, then the general borrowings apply to the asset. So you might not want to get into that.
Well, and I suppose then that's why what we would try to do in the agenda decision is very much just quote from the requirements in IS 23, which, and the piece that was missing from the agenda decision at the minute, I think, is to quote what's in paragraph 18 of IS 23, which uses the word normally, in a sense. So IS 23 already, you know, so we wouldn't be, to your point, Michael, we wouldn't be, I think, in at least what we're suggesting in the agenda, it's not at all, we'd say, you always top slice general borrowings. We would use the words in IS 23 that says, normally, in effect, you'd be doing the top slicing, but that's normally, but not always.
Is 18 about normally about the cost of the assets, rather than normally which borrowings were used?
And that's right. And I think the question we've got about the expenditures is about the cost of the asset. It's about the expenditures that you've made on the asset have been incurred before and after the date when you got
the borrowing cost. Okay, so let's do Reinhard.
Oh, sorry, Reinhard.
So my views would be more aligned with what Michael just explained, and my reasoning is as follows, that although the paragraph 18 in IS 23 talks about the words normally, cash is fungible, and I would think it'd be very rare in a circumstance that you would not that you would try to bifurcate general borrowings. My biggest concern is effectively saying that you might in some circumstances bifurcate general borrowings, I think could be seen as inconsistent with our annual improvement amendments to IS 23 that we issued in December of last year, which basically, the way I read it, says you use all your outstanding borrowings in determining the capitalization rate, except for those that were specifically to obtain a qualifying asset not ready for its intended use. And so I didn't see that those words require you to allocate general borrowings to particular qualifying assets or building projects. So, I like the direction the staff is, and you know, the clarifications the staff are making, but I'm just concerned that the circumstances in which we would try to bifurcate the general borrowings might be seen as being inconsistent with the other amendments that we made to IS 23, and so I would think that would be more along the lines of a rare circumstance.
Okay, so what I'm going to do in the first instance is get the committee to vote on question two, to confirm whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to our standard setting agenda. Assuming we get confirmation of that, then I think what we'll do is pause and get Katrina to sort of recap what we would be planning an agenda decision would say, if that's where we land up, so we all know exactly what it is we're voting on. The first question, question two on page 10, does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add this matter to its standard setting agenda? Can I have a show of hands, please?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Everyone?
That's everybody. Okay, good. All right, now, Katrina, I'm going to hand you the more difficult job, which is what the agenda decision would look like.
This is my proposal of what it might look like, and just looking at the considerations, and Javed and Nicola come in. So,
can I just make an observation before you do that? I think that the important thing for me on this agenda decision is making it very clear that the focus of this question is a very particular question,
yes,
which is about the fact that the borrowings sort of come in subsequent.
Yep.
Because I think the risk is when it starts to be read as a much bigger question about how you apply 23.
Yes. Okay, so I think if you turn to pages 11 and 12 and look at the tentative agenda decision. So I think what we propose is to really not do very much to page one. And I will just highlight, some points that Sue just made to say. Of course, the request is about the expenditures on the qualifying asset that you end up applying a capitalisation rate to. And I only emphasise that because I might come back to it. Because, only to say that even in some of our discussions, it's sometimes a bit confusing in 23 that you've got costs that you incur that are the borrowing costs, but here what we're talking about are the costs or the expenditure that you're actually incurring on the asset to which that you then apply a capitalization rate. So we keep that. We keep on page one obviously the important factor that makes clear that you cannot be capitalizing borrowing costs before you've actually incurred the borrowing costs. So even though you've spent money on the asset before you've got the borrowing costs, you don't do that. We keep, I think, what's at the bottom of page 11, top of page 12, which is just quoting the general thinking when you're coming along and thinking about the capitalisation of borrowing costs. But then when we get to the top of page 11, I think we just say then, top of page 12, thank you. We say somehow, accordingly in this fact pattern, an entity will assess the extent to which it uses general borrowings to fund the qualifying asset by considering whether, it would have avoided incurring these borrowing costs if it had not incurred the expenditure. That's just feeding off what we quoted in the last paragraph. And then we go on to say something like that the committee observed that, in applying IAS 18 of IAS 23, an entity normally, but not always, uses an average carrying amount of the asset during the period as a reasonable approximation. And in this particular fact pattern, using the average carrying amount of the asset would lead to an entity including all of the expenditure, including the expenditure both before the borrowing costs were incurred and after. That's it. So it still says you're looking at the extent, however, an important touch point is to say paragraph 18 of IAS 23 says normally you'd expect to include both the expenditure before and after.
Something also that is difficult to read in the agenda decision, if you go back to page 11, and there is a paragraph stating, applying paragraph 17 of IAS 23 to the fact pattern described in the request, the entity does not begin capitalizing borrowing costs until it incurs borrowing costs. The introductory sentence of the concluding paragraphs states the committee concluded that assessing whether an entity includes expenditure on a qualifying asset before obtaining. So we said no, but yes. So I think we should clarify that recognition no, but measurements yes, in certain circumstances. It was basically my previous comments, actually. So I don't know how you can figure it out, things, but this leads to complexity in understanding what exactly you want to achieve through this agenda decision.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at that as helpful. I think the point you raised, Bertrand, is the slightly confusing part I pointed out in IAS 23, that in one respect we're talking about capitalising borrowing costs, which doesn't happen until you actually have the borrowings, but actually this question ends up being about the costs that you incur on the asset. So it's almost like there's two different costs. One is the borrowing cost you're capitalising, but to even work out that number, you're thinking about the expenditures on the asset. So
applying the recognition principle, no, but applying the measurement principle, yes,
yeah,
in certain instances, and it's these certain circumstances that may be a bit more precise in the agenda decision, maybe. Or if you prefer the other way around, saying circumstances you might depart from this. I don't know the best way to proceed on that, but...
John, have you got a magic way to help us shed light on this?
No, but I have a question. I think it's fairly clear that you don't capitalise borrowing costs in the example during the first 6 months because you have no borrowing, so how can you capitalise borrowing costs? I think the question is, do you have to capitalise borrowing costs in the second 6 months to the balance of the asset which was created in the first six months?
Yes.
I think by focusing on the word normally, I don't think we're actually answering the question as to whether in this circumstance we think you would capitalise borrowing costs. My view is you would, because you capitalise borrowing to the extent you have general borrowings, you capitalize borrowing costs to the amount of a qualifying asset. It doesn't matter when that expenditure on that qualifying asset is incurred. It does, of course, matter when the borrowing costs are incurred, because you can't capitalize borrowing costs that you don't have. But the word normally would say, I mean, the problem with the word normally is what is normal and what is not normal in the circumstance of that paragraph.
Okay, so what would you, do you have a specific suggestion we could use to help us move forward?
Based on the words in IS 23?
Mary, do you have some specific words?
Yeah, I think I do.
Suggest the agenda decision too much.
It says, in calculating the amount of the borrowing cost to be capitalized, you know, after the borrowing is incurred, I think if it makes the point that it's in the calculating the amount of the borrowing cost to be capitalized. I think that's a way of getting kind of to Bertrand's concern in addressing John's comments. That isn't a complete sentence, but I think if you just start out something so it makes it clear that you're signaling it's the cost incurred after the date that the borrowing has been obtained. You consider the, you know, expended. I don't have the second half of that sentence worked out, but I think that's the main signal you're trying to send.
So I think, Mary, your comment would hopefully be helpful in the point that Bertrand raised, and that hopefully might be a way of distinguishing. I think, John, potentially you're saying something slightly, in terms of, I can, different to maybe what we're saying is, because I think you would say, you would think almost always there's not a normally.
I think
always.
From my experience in practice, is people, once they would incur a borrowing, they would capitalise borrowing costs to the quantum of any qualifying asset, irrespective of when that expenditure on that qualifying asset was actually incurred. You wouldn't just capitalise on expenditure you're incurring while you had the borrowing. You would actually capitalise borrowing costs to the quantum of qualifying expenditure.
And I suppose all we were saying in reading the words in particular, so the paragraph 18 says that's why I think you get there in practice, because it says normally that's what you do. But just in thinking about the other overlying principle and the opening words in paragraph 14, which is why we thought based on the words in 23, we couldn't necessarily say that's always.
Can I just confirm something with you, Petrina? Because just going back to my point about making sure that the agenda decision is focused very specifically on the question that we were asked, which in the grand scheme of 23 is a very specific and focused question, and relatively simple in the narrow fact pattern that we've been given. So are you proposing in your agenda decision that you're asking the board the committee to consider voting on that we're, deleting the words on paragraph 12 that start with the committee concluded with the sub-paragraphs A and B?
So I am proposing to delete that, but I would propose to replace it. So the replacing would be that we have a paragraph that talks about accordingly in the fact. We'd feed off what's at the bottom of page 11, top of page 12. So we keep what's at the bottom of.
So we've got everything up to for the purpose of obtaining
a qualifying asset. We then have because that paragraph talks more generally. So we'd have a little accordingly in the fact pattern. You'd do that. You'd have an entity would assess the extent to which it uses general borrowings by having a look at whether it could have avoided the borrowing cost. So we'd have a little paragraph that links to the previous one, the general, which still kind of is general, but then we'd go on to talk specifically to say that the committee observed what's in paragraph 18 of IS 23, that in this situation an entity would normally, but not always, use the average carrying amount of the asset as a reasonable approximation for the expenditure, and in the fact pattern in the request. That would mean that they'd be including all of the expenditure, both the before and after.
Does that help you, John, or upset you?
I don't think it answers the question between view one and view two. I mean, I would never have interpreted normally as applying to whether I apply to the total quantum of capitalised expenditure. I would have used normally. I would have interpreted normally as in, well, sometimes an average may not actually reflect the pattern of accretion of the qualifying asset. Or the pattern of growth of the qualifying asset. I would always have thought the question, I would also have interpreted 23 as requiring you to capitalise borrowing costs to the extent you have them, to the quantum of any qualifying asset, irrespective of when that expenditure was incurred. I wouldn't have read normally as suggesting that I mean, to me, the word normally is to call into question whether sometimes an average won't be the appropriate pattern of the way the expenditure has been incurred.
Yeah. And I suppose then for us, but then maybe, and open to this is that, but how do you read? Because the opening words of paragraph 14, which is really, you know, we're not feeding everything we got off normally, is to the extent that an entity borrows funds generally and uses them for the purpose of obtaining a qualifying asset.
But I think I go back to Reinhardt's comments and Michael's comments that I would always have considered general borrowings as always applying, unless there were specific borrowings, they always apply to any qualifying asset that I actually have in existence. Yeah,
because cash is fungible.
Obtaining, not financing. Yeah. Obtaining. That's the problematic word.
Okay.
I wondered if we could narrow it, because there is a very specific question here about do you disregard the expenditure before the borrowings were obtained?
Yes or no?
That's the question.
Yes or no? Yes.
Do we need to get into some of the higher level theory in IS 23 to answer that question? Or could we say, by reference to paragraph 18, there is a reference to the carrying value? I agree with John, by the way, that the reference to normal is whether average is right. But there is a reference to the carrying value, which, to my mind, implies you don't disregard costs that are included in that carrying value that were incurred beforehand. Okay. So we just make it very, very narrow and say we have something that says you don't disregard costs that were incurred before the borrowing.
In which case, could we focus on the agenda decision, just as a suggestion, on the point that we've already got in here, which is confirming that you can't start capitalising borrowing costs until you've borrowed money. And then as a second point, you don't disregard expenditure that was incurred before the general borrowings were made. And just focus on that, because that seems to be basically what the question was.
I think that's right, and I'm happy to take the middle. All I'm saying is, at least as staff, we didn't read the words in 23, I think, as black and white as what John and Tony are saying. We're saying in most cases, normally in the vast majority of cases, but it's just those opening words of paragraph 14.
But if we express it as you shouldn't disregard expenditure before, I don't think that's a pining on it.
Yeah. Okay. That was my thought.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, interrupt. If you look at the paragraph 14, I think you can read that slightly differently as well, Katrina. You are using the funds for the purpose of obtaining the asset as a whole. It doesn't say you have to use the funds for specific cash expenditures on an asset.
Yep.
So I think 14 allows you to apply the borrowing to expenditures.
Yeah. But I don't think we ever need to get into that.
Oh, no, I don't think you do, but I think
I would agree with what you said.
Includes that.
So is that okay, Katrina?
I can take it offline.
What we're proposing is that the agenda decision would, I think, would flow down where it does all the way through to saying, applying paragraph 17 to the fact pattern described, the entity does not begin capitalising borrowing costs until it incurs.
And then do we go on to mention paragraph 18 of IS 23?
And
we don't even do that. We just say that means you don't disregard.
Just need to say you don't disregard amounts.
In calculating the amount of borrowing costs to be capitalised after the borrowing has been incurred, you do not disregard
amounts incurred before the borrowing. Which I think I feel more comfortable with, I must say, because it's much more focused specifically on what the question was. Okay, so with that, assuming you're okay with that, Katrina?
Yes.
A show of hands from the committee on whether you could support that tentative agenda decision.
13. Not sure. I 100% agree with the direction we are in, but that's why I'm not sure.
As it goes out for comments. All right. So moving on to 3B.
The agenda paper 3B discusses when an entity ceases capitalising borrowing costs on land in a particular fact pattern, described in paragraph 5 of the paper. We conducted outreach on this matter. Paragraphs 12 to 15 summarise our findings from this outreach. Paragraphs 16 to 26 present our analysis on this matter. In particular, we considered A, the intended use of the land, and B, when the entity completes substantially all the activities necessary to prepare the land for its intended use or sale. Paragraphs 33 to 35 summarize our conclusions on this matter. We think that an entity uses land and buildings for owner occupation, rent, or capital appreciation, or for sale. We think the intended use of the land is not simply to construct the building on that land, but rather to use it for one of these three purposes. In then determining whether the land is ready for the intended use or sale, we think the entity considers whether the land is capable of being used for its intended purpose while construction continues on the building. I would like to clarify one matter. In the paper and in the agenda decision, we have used wording that refers to expenditures incurred in developing the land and land development expenditures. We did not intend to imply the entity can capitalize borrowing costs only on expenditures incurred in developing the land and not, for example, on expenditures incurred in acquiring the land. We will amend the wording in the agenda decision to reflect this by referring to land expenditures rather than land development expenditures. I would like to draw your attention to question 1 on page 9 and ask if you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IAS 23.
Yeah, I'll stop. I actually agreed with the staff's paper. I agree with the conclusion we got to. That's happy.
Thank you. Anybody else? Young Sue?
I generally agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. I don't. However, I think I have two comments. The first one is that maybe we have to include a guidance on to which asset. We have to add the capitalized borrowing cost between the land or the building. I think the staff is suggesting to add the borrowing cost to the land, but as far as I know, U.S. GAAP is adding the borrowing cost to the building. So if we don't say anything about that, there is going to be some kind of diversity in the practice. So I suggest to say something about to which asset we have to add the capitalized borrowing cost. That is my first comment. The second one, you know, when I read the agenda decision on page 11, it starts with the paragraph after bullet C, the second sentence, second line of that paragraph. It says the expenditures on developing the land, and the paragraph says land development expenditures. So what I see is that, you know, the staff is suggesting to capitalize only the borrowing cost, capitalize the borrowing cost only for the land development expenditure, not for the land purchase expenditures. I don't know why we don't add acquiring or purchase expenditures for the land.
That's what Nicolette just clarified. So.
We agree with you, and we think we should change that.
Would need to be adjusted.
Yang Su, I suppose on your first point as to which asset you would then capitalize those costs to, I suppose it would very much depend on the facts and circumstances of that case, because depending on which standard you find yourself in, whether it's inventory, whether it's investment property, or whether it is PP&E, it's most likely if it's going to be owner-occupied and you've got two separate assets that you're going to be considering this question. You will then have to look at the guidance in IS 16, which talks about directly attributable costs, and then make your own determination, I think, is the application of our principle. So I know US GAAP is specific, but I suppose for us it would very much depend on the facts and circumstances. In many cases, you could say that during the period where you are constructing the building, that you are only funding the development and the acquisition costs of the land during that period because of the construction of the building. So it could be attributable to the building, but there are also arguments as to why it could be directly attributable to the land. And again, you would consider the facts and circumstances as it is financing for the land. And
Actually what I do not get that much. You know, if the land, the cost of the land should be should be capitalized. I mean, the borrowing cost for the cost of the lien should be capitalized. The reason why we have to capitalize is to build the building,
yeah.
not to build the lien. So I think US GAAP is more appropriate in that sense.
And Yonsu, just to say, we're not disagreeing with that. It's more to say, first of all, that wasn't actually the question asked in the submission, but more importantly, we don't have specific requirements, I think, in our standards that tell you one or the other. So for us, we think we'd be going beyond what we could appropriately do in an agenda decision to go as far as answering that.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis, and thanks for clarifying the landed development expenditures versus land, because I had the same point. I think one of the issues that's touched on in the paper, which I think is not brought out in the analysis because it's not directly the question asked, is sort of the interaction between the qualifying asset and the capitalization of the expenditure and whether you might have one or two performance obligations under a contract with your customers. Because if you had two performance obligations, one for the transfer of the land and one for the transfer of the building, then you may well cease to be a qualifying asset in respect to the land at a different time than you would cease to be a qualifying asset in respect to the building. So I know that that's not directly related to the question asked, but there's also a related issue about the interrelationship between the cessation of capitalization in IAS 23 and the timing of the satisfaction of performance obligations in IFRS 15, which there has been some debate about and may well be something that's heading the committee's way. So.
But not for this agenda, does it? Bertrand?
So same comment as John, actually. I had difficulties in really getting paragraphs 30 to 32 of the agenda paper. I mean, if you have the one performance obligation, perfect. If you have two, then I would totally concur with John's comments. I would see it difficult to continue to capitalize borrowing costs on the lens that you have sought.
Okay. Andrew?
I'll be consistent. I had quite a similar point. When I looked at paragraph 32, I paused a bit because what it says is that the recognition of revenue over time or at a point in time doesn't have a direct effect on when you cease capitalising borrowing costs. But I think it perhaps depends, and it depends on the kind of asset you're looking at. So if you take the two extremes, you might have something like we discussed before, where you have two performance obligations, one for the sale of the land and then the other one for constructing the building. And the land's already gone, so you can't capitalise anything there. You might also have something where you're selling units in an apartment block, and you've got a single performance obligation, but you might be recognising revenue over time. And that's going to affect the amount of the land attributed to that apartment block, which then affects what you're going to be able to capitalise. So I think because it's summarised down, that doesn't necessarily affect the agenda decision. The only question is whether it would be helpful for us to say something about the need to focus on the point at which a sale is recognised, and whether it's point in time or over time, which will by itself affect the amount of the qualifying assets on the balance sheet and therefore what we capitalise.
Making me nervous on the fly, but Tony?
I concur with where the staff's got to, and I wonder if it would be... if there will be a risk in attempting to address the IFRS 15 question now, because my sense is that the principle is, when is the asset ready for its intended use? So if it's two performance obligations and you've sold it, I reckon it's ready for its intended use and you've actually sold it. If there's a single performance obligation, or if, as Andrew says, you're building an apartment block, then there's a question about when the inventory becomes ready for its intended use during that process. How are you dealing with the land as part of the single performance obligation? But that seems to me to be a question that's way beyond this. The principle is the land ready for its intended use? And if the answer is no, it's not, then you keep capitalising. And I think at the moment, I would rather leave it there.
Something if we can be comfortable with that.
And if I could say, I thought the agenda decision did get there, but as it stands at the moment, it was just there was a question that was raised. If you read the agenda paper, you might ask a question in the agenda decision, but I don't think I would object to the agenda decision as drafted.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Martin?
I struggle a little bit with paragraph 19. In a way, we say there is an intended use, which is either owner of when the capital at this and then sometimes big real estate companies are driven by opportunities. So sometimes they're selling the buildings directly onwards, or they rent them out. So for me, really, the question is whether we can't say that the reason, the primary reason for the land, predominantly, first of all, is to construct a building. And what we do afterwards then with the building is a question of market and opportunities. But here in paragraph 19, we say more or less, it leads in a way that from the beginning onwards, we do it either for or. So therefore, I struggle with that.
But we are trying to just work with the words we've got in the standard, which does focus on intended use. Jennifer.
So just wanted to make an observation around maybe what we see in practice, at least based on some of our staff's filing reviews. And this gets, to some extent, gets beyond the specific question that's being addressed here, but just to the phrasing of substantially all the activities necessary to prepare the land and building for intended use or sale, where that's complete. What our staff sees is there's, I think, a variety of factors that companies use in making that assessment, which could be beyond just the asset being physically ready to be used. Apparently, some use profitability thresholds and other things. So I know that's beyond the scope of what we're trying to address here, but I think that's just that's probably more where some of the challenges are and just looking at those factors. So.
Thank you. Carl.
Yes, I also concur with staff's analysis, and different from others, I like the logic set out in paragraph 32. I don't think it's necessary to bring it this discussion to the agenda decision. I would keep the agenda decision simpler.
Bertrand?
Just to a question for Andrew, actually, and Tony. Are you hinting the fact that because the agenda decision states for its intended use or sale, that you would be fine with the IFRS 15 issue of having one or two separate performance obligations? If it's sold, then it's fine.
My sense is that in the context of a piece of land and a single building, then I think I can work with IFRS 15 in that context. My sense was that there is a layer of complexity in IFRS 15, particularly if you get into it being an apartment block, that creates further questions about when the asset is ready for its intended use. And I think it would be perhaps dangerous to try and address that now.
Yeah.
Let's wait and see if that appears as a separate question, which it might do.
That on another day. Okay. Are we ready now to vote on question two? Mm-hmm. So does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add this matter to its standard setting agenda? Show of hands, please.
Everybody?
Oh, good. So, and then moving on to question three, with Nicolette's clarification that would adjust the wording to make it clear that the acquisition cost of the land itself would be included as well. Could I get a show of hands on whether the committee agrees with the draft agenda decision?
Everyone except Martin, I think. You're voting yes?
No, I had concerns with
Okay, that's fine. So it's 13.